When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Morning, my name is Gavin from FE News and welcome to episode 3 of Future Assessment. Today is around adaptations for 21-22 and beyond. And I'm joined by my co-host is Zach from NCFE. Zach, I wonder if you could join us this morning. Hello, Zach.
Morning, Gavin. How you doing?
Yeah, really, really good. Today we've got a really, really interesting show because basically what we're looking to try to explore is lessons from the pandemic in terms of how we assess learners in the future, but also how we support the rest of the sector as well. And it was a bit of a roller coaster 18 months really for everyone at the end of the day. So Zach, I didn't know if you could maybe share some of your thoughts around how the sector adapted, because there's one point when no one really had a clue what was going on at one point. Government, everybody. It was just like this sort of crazy sort of period, really, wasn't it? And how did everyone adapt in your mind? Because it was personal as well as work, wasn't it? You know, learners, there was a lot going on.
Yeah, that's right. We had to adapt professionally and personally, as you say. And those of us working in education did both and had to do both fairly quickly. Sector always impresses me, the education sector. I've worked in it for nearly 20 years now, and there's never a day goes by when it doesn't, you know, the individuals working within it or the organisations, schools, colleges, training providers delivering content and learning on a daily basis, they always impress me. And I think one of the most interesting ways to illustrate that was NCFE awards T-levels. And for those in the audience that don't know, T-levels are essentially a revolution in level 3 technical education, equivalent to 3A levels, designed to get students from, you know, who want to work in a certain vocational sector into a job or higher education over the course of 2 years. And T-levels began last September 2020, in the midst of, you know, the pandemic and the adaptations that colleges and training providers and the schools were having to make to their learning. And I spoke with colleagues about this a number of times. The easiest thing in the world would have been to say, I'm just going to wait and do it next September 2021 because I'm dealing with everything else that's going on at the minute. And, you know, invariably those small, the small selection of providers who were chosen to deliver T-levels in the first wave didn't do that. They took on that challenge as well as everything else they were dealing with, and they did it really well. And retention on those qualifications into year two, which has just started, is in the high 90s, which I think just really helps to highlight how brilliant a job the sector does, not just on a daily basis, but when enormous challenges are thrown at them, really.
Yeah, no, there's enough adapting to T levels as it was anyway, let alone when there's a pandemic happening as well, isn't it?
Exactly. And you mentioned that from a personal point of view as well, I think all of us on the call today and many who are listening will have children. I had when the pandemic started, a 7-year-old daughter. She was 9 yesterday, so it shows how long that's been going on for. And her being at home while I was working full time and having to do her schoolwork, and the way the school kept in touch with her, you know, the way that they got her classmates together to try as hard as they could to help the kids feel okay about not seeing other human beings, because that's a big part of how we feel about ourselves, is our, you know, daily human contact with people. It's our sense of self, and our sense of well-being is associated with all of that. The way her school really tried very, very hard to make sure she and her classmates were okay was, again, really impressive.
And I was going to ask you about this in a little bit, but I might as well jump straight into it now. There was so much around, you know, home, because I've got kids too, and the lost learning for all learners, really, and how we can sort of support that, because your daughter must have come across that. I know my kids did as well. When we're sort of thinking around adaptations, how can we sort of also be mindful of the lost learning that has happened, and the wider elements as well? So it's the mental health and well-being around that as well, isn't it, like you touched on?
Yeah, I think there's two angles to lost learning. One is they just didn't learn as much as they usually would have done, which they lost, and will struggle to get it back. But the second one is how they access that learning in the first place. So it's to your second point there about mental health. You can't take in, you know, maths or English or science if you're constantly feeling anxious, because you catch snippets of news stories about people dying all over the world. For, you know, it's scary enough for us. For young children, it must be completely, you know, daunting, and they'd really struggle to access learning. And I saw that in my own daughter. She's adopted, so has certain specific needs anyway. And I think the most important thing for her during that time was just to feel okay about what was going on around her. You know, I didn't focus too much on what she was missing out on in terms of learning, and luckily the school supported that as well. You know, for some kids, it would have been fine just to send them a load of schoolwork home and the kids would sit there at the desk and get on with it. My daughter wouldn't do that, not in a million years. So the biggest job for her during that 18 months was just to make sure she felt okay about herself and knew that the people she wasn't seeing anymore on a daily basis were just still around. So she's feeling comfortable about herself. She then has a higher ability to access the learning she's missed and catch up afterwards. And catch up is really important, of course. But I think what's absolutely more important is making those kids understand that things are mostly still okay and they don't need to worry and that they will catch up.
Yeah, no, definitely. I wonder if we could bring in our guests. Is Chris, also from NCFE, and Mike from York College. Mm-hmm. Hi, Mike. Hi, Chris. And I wanted to ask everyone, really, what were the lessons that were learnt during the pandemic around assessment, but also adaptations which were made? Zach, did you want to continue with that at all?
Lessons learned, I mean, dozens of lessons. Chris will touch on the specifics because he's the man who knows all this stuff. But we run a very substantial and high profile program within our organization to make sure that we learn those lessons, and produced a God knows how many page report off the back of all the kind of technical adaptations we made last year. But I guess the one thing I would say about that is we, and I'm sure other awarding organizations, when we talk about this stuff, we always remind ourselves, and sometimes it's a struggle because, you know, running a business is difficult and there's certain targets you have to meet outside of the student experience. But what we always try and do is reflect it back to that student experience at the end. And sometimes we have to remind each other in meetings, etc. But I think that's absolutely vitally important when we're making our adaptations that Chris will go into, is that the thing we must focus on ultimately, while retaining the integrity of what we award, is the students that are affected by it, the learners and students that are affected by what happened, but also by what we're doing. We've got to have a level playing field. It's all got to be fair. We can't disadvantage anybody, or we don't want to disadvantage anybody to as much of an extent as possible. But those students are vitally important, and we always try and keep that in the forefront of our mind when talking about this stuff.
Yeah, no, definitely. Chris, I wonder if I could bring you in around lessons learned from the pandemic, really, but also around adaptation for then, but what we want to bring into the future, really.
Yeah, certainly. So I think one of the biggest lessons we've learned, particularly, is naturally we've took direction from the government, so that being Ofqual, DfE, on how we should approach adapting our qualifications. And I think where we've transpired that information and produced adaptations to support customers, I think one of the biggest lessons learned is really is that engagement with customers to check and challenge the adaptations that we've put in place or actually working with them. So we've done this in a number of ways where customers can just openly get in touch with us, but where we've really tried to be proactive and trigger that through a number of surveys, through customer focus groups. And that's where we've really been able to review our adaptations, amend them accordingly, and make sure they are fit for purpose for the market. And that's been one of our biggest lessons learned, is ultimately listen to the customers and the needs of the customers.
Yeah, no, that's really, really cool. Mike, I wonder if I could bring in, I muted your mic in the background because I could see it's live, Mike's in the office and there's colleagues doing work in the background as they should be. But Mike, how was it for you at the college over the pandemic period?
Well, I mean, like all colleges, I think we found it a bit of a challenge and we went through total lockdown, and then we had half the students in and half the students out, and then we had another lockdown. And then we came back. In terms of adaptations, one of the things a lot of our teams did was try to not use them, to try and do as much business as usual assessment as we could, because we felt that was best for the students. And something like 80% of our NCFA students, we didn't use any adaptations whatsoever. Where we had to use them was where it was things like license to practice, or there was a practical element that was affected by the pandemic where we did use it. But things like business, where there was no practical element, we did absolutely none of those students use any adaptations whatsoever, beyond maybe minor tweaks that were allowed. But in many cases, it was completely business as usual. So as a college, we liked the fact that we had adaptations, but we didn't want to use them unless we felt we absolutely had to. Because for the students, them knowing they've done all the same assessments as the people before them and the people who'll do them this year is probably a better thing than getting them through the pandemic.
Yeah, no, that definitely. And what are you doing sort of at the moment? What's the plan for the future as well? Is it to sort of have the adaptations as and when you need and to use them in certain cases, or are you sort of taking a different approach again?
Well, I think our approach now is that we will only use adaptations if we desperately need to. We're obviously adapting the way we're teaching. Most of our teams have started with a 4 to 6 week extended induction, where we've tried to make sure the students who come in from schools, the grades that they've been given by the schools add up in terms of their actual ability in the classroom, to get them all on the right course before half term. And I think we're pretty well there. And then we will proceed from there. And if there are no more lockdowns, if nothing changes, we would hope to do 99.9% of our students without adaptations. Obviously, all that all depends on the pandemic and whether we end up back in lockdown and whether we then need to amend stuff. And I think that's what we've learned, really, is that we can be very flexible. We can make use of these changes when we need to. But fundamentally, we don't want them. They're not something we see as being a good thing. They're a response to a pandemic. We've learned other things around teaching from the pandemic, which we are taking forward. But in terms of assessment, we would really prefer to go back to very much assessing everything in the way that it was assessed before the pandemic started.
Yeah, no, definitely. I wonder if I could open this up to everyone, really. Ultimately, we're always thinking about the learner, but how also are we supporting the educators that are going through all sorts of different changes over the pandemic, but also going forward, how they can adapt and change moving forward? I don't know if anyone wanted to sort of feel free to jump in.
I mean, I'll go again there. Certainly at York, we've done an awful lot of work on digital skills, and in fact, we've basically discovered a particular product that we had and we didn't really use, and we trained all the staff in it in 2 days in March 2020. And ever since we've been using it more and more, it's now becoming, it's taking over from our VLE. It will become our sort of virtual learning system. And we've learned a lot from the way we use that. We've now, every course now has a class on this software, and we kind of really have changed the way we work in terms of the software we use and the way we use it. And there's been a lot of learning about what works in the classroom. So we did the JISC digital experience survey, and we came out very, very highly on the quality of the teaching, something like 15 to 20% above the sector normal. So I think that's the bit we did really well, was getting the actual tuition going well and the assessment.
Chris, is there anything you wanted to jump in? Really, it's around supporting the different ways of supporting the sector, really, isn't it? Because we, at the end of the day, it's all about the learner, but we've also got to support the educator to be able to support the learner at the end of the day, haven't we, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, certainly. So I think, as sort of Mike's touched on there, I think the pandemic has forced us somewhat to become a little bit more digital savvy, to understand what more digital ways we can utilise a delivery, teaching and assessment of our learners. But I think particularly, I think other aspects that have developed those key assessors, teachers and deliverers around adaptations is where we've put in place flexibility to take alternative approaches to assessment methods or assessment evidence. So traditionally, you know, people who are delivering qualifications may have a fundamental way of assessing a particular element within a program. It could be a report, it could be a PowerPoint. What the adaptations has kind of opened our awareness or those who are delivering the qualifications awareness is that the other methods and the other evidence that could be utilised to increase the flexibility for learners being able to achieve those outcomes. And I think the other aspects that we've put in place around centre devised assessments is increase the flexibility and awareness of those delivering qualifications, that you don't always have to follow the set assessments within qualifications, and there is guidance there that can support you in devising your own assessments to allow them to take more holistic approaches to assessments. So if anything, it's increased the awareness of the alternative ways to assess qualifications, how they can be evidenced, but also how they can also approach the assessment of those qualifications as well. So it's that increased awareness as well.
Yeah, that's really cool, and I think it's sort of highlighting the flexibilities which sometimes people could feel a bit more rigid in for. Exactly, look like you wanted to jump in with something there.
Yeah, I was going to mention something just after Mike finished speaking. It's really always for me fascinating to hear people who are actually, you know, we work for an awarding body, we don't work in a training provider, so to hear what it's like on the ground is always really interesting for me. And we had a little bit of that last week or a couple of weeks ago, where NCFE launched its new brand externally and invited two, three students along to talk to us. And you know, they stole the show. Students, when they come and talk at those sort of events, always steal the show, and these are no exception. They were, again, two T-level students from Gateshead College in the Northeast, and they spoke so well and eloquently about their experience of the last year. The one thing they said that they would have improved if they could was the accessibility of the digital materials that we produced for the program, which were there, but the technology couldn't keep up with the way those students wanted to access them. So I think your question around supporting educators to be able to teach in this new world is really key, because we need to be able to keep up with the kids. That they'll learn something like that in minutes, that when it takes those of us who are a little bit older a little bit longer. So I think as we move into the future, what's going to be really important is that the technology we have access to, or that we produce, or that we build, keeps up with the demands of the students we're delivering it to, so that the educators can keep pace with them and produce content and learning materials in ways that those students can access, so that, as Mike says, they're able to sit business as usual assessments, and that we don't have to adapt things in as far as we possibly can.
Yeah, no, definitely. During the pandemic, it was everyone had to adapt lightning quick, and I'm just amazed at how quick everyone did in all sorts of fields, not just in the sector but in everything. But now we've had a little bit of time to breathe slightly. And you know, it's still been sort of trying to play catch up from the lost learning, from like dealing with the mental health and wellbeing of ourselves and also learners and staff. What are the lessons that we can sort of take from that, take a bit of stock and then be able to then continue and drive forward? So as we can have, like, as Chris is saying, those greater flexibilities. I'd like to open it up to everyone. Yeah, what would you like to, what did you sort of take away as something you really want to be able to continue and press forward with?
Go on, Chris, you go.
Yeah, certainly. So I think the key thing from our perspective, Gavin, from an award and organisation is the real need for increased flexibility in our qualifications. And this has kind of forced our hand to look at how we do that. So we've touched on how we can be more flexible with the internal assessment, whether that be alternative assessment methods, alternative evidence, but also looking at other forms we can do that through the assessments. So really that's kind of, you know, for us as a lesson learned going forward, not just for the, you know, the pandemic and where we might see further disruption, is a really long-term future as to how we actually can increase flexibility for internal assessment, for the external assessments. So if are all of our assessments digitally available, can they be accessed online, on demand? So it's kind of forcing us to look at those aspects to make sure we've got increased flexibility, but also work placements as well, where learners might be able to access work placements, how we can have alternative means such as simulation to support those aspects. So there's a number of things from a long-term view that we want to increase the flexibility as much as possible for our qualifications.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because, you know, particularly with like T-levels, a major part of T-levels, for example, is the work placement. But during a pandemic, when everyone's in lockdown, that's a little bit tricky to sort of cover that, isn't it? So that's interesting that you've put in different facets around it.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really key point. And you'd be amazed how well, again, how well providers did on accessing T-level work placements. You know, the T-level that started last year, the NCFE awards, is the education and childcare T-level. Very difficult to simulate the work placement in there. You probably can't do it, shouldn't do it, as a license to practice attached to it. But in other T-levels, digital ones, etc., I think there is the chance to take stock and be much more flexible, not because you're diluting down the quality of the placement that a student gets, but because that sector doesn't work in those ways. So doing a remotely hosted digital industry placement is not different to how that student would ultimately end up working, because that is how that sector works now. That's how a lot of us work now. I never go into the office, or very rarely go into the office. I can't have a student sitting next to me doing a work placement. So we have to find ways of doing those remotely. And that's not different to how the sector behaves. That is how the sector behaves. And then of course education has to follow suit, and has to follow suit quickly, otherwise those students won't be as employment ready as they could be when they finish their programs.
Yeah, definitely. Mike, can I ask you around additional flexibility? That's a really, really good point around the future of work and delivering education to meet those needs, really. Mike, how are the flexibilities for you going forward?
I mean, I think for us, I mean, T levels are a challenge. Because the whole idea that we're going, you know, the number of work placements we're going to need is a massive challenge. The fact that the way they're structured means that actually there's less internal assessment, there's more external assessment. So, and given that we are expecting large numbers of other level three courses to be chopped, and we're still not entirely sure what's happening at level one and two, I think from a sector point of view at the moment, we're very glad that we've got this year to kind of start to settle down and get on top of things. By next year, we'll start to get more sense about where the government is taking us. And I think the things we've learned at the moment are we're going to have more digital learning. You know, that is something that's going to be happening. We're going to need more digital assessment. We're going to need to work with awarding organisations to make sure that as has been described, everything is available online, everything's easy to access, and not just because of the pandemic, but because colleges are of a limited size. We can't afford necessarily to build more buildings, but we are going to have more students. There's a rising demographic, more students coming in, and one of the only ways we can probably fit the number of bodies into the building is to make use of digital learning wherever we can. So I do think there's a lot of if you put those two together, we've got digital learning, we've got lots of assistance needs from ordinary organizations, but we're moving from a kind of architecture which is quite loose and fluid, and where awarding organizations can look very different because they can have different ways of assessment, to T levels, which are pretty rigid. You know, they're pretty well defined by Ofqual. This is what a T level looks like. It has to have this, and this. It has to have an employer-led project. It has to have exams. And that kind of limits the flexibility of awarding organizations, as well as the flexibility of colleges to respond to that. So I think as a sector, our big challenge in the next couple of years is that move across from the current 20,000 qualifications to however many we get allowed to have when Ofqual finish their job.
Yeah, or when the new administration of you know, the people at the top of all change, who knows what their sort of views are on things as well. Things could very much change again. Zach, looked like you wanted to say something.
I totally agree with Mike's point there. I think it's one really worth fleshing out a little bit, because we're trying to be as flexible as we possibly can be within an extremely rigid system. You know, we have qualification frameworks that we have to abide by, and on T levels, Mike's right, you know, there's very little wriggle room in what we're allowed to do. So I think that fairness piece, and trying to, as NCFE does, as Mike will do, and as all the colleagues across the country in education will do, which is try and fit individual student needs within A, you know, a qualification framework they're delivering, and B, then an education framework that those qualification frameworks are set in, which are both quite rigid, is a hugely significant challenge. And then you've got all the other stuff that sits around those qualifications to cope with as well. So supporting good mental health, you know, the pastoral care our students need, which is increasing on a daily basis. It was even before the pandemic. It will be off the charts now. The tutorials you have to get in, all that other great stuff that actually supports employability skills and set students up for success when they start work or go on to further education. All of us are working within that rigid framework, and we're all trying to be as flexible as we possibly can. So I think that, if anything, if that flexibility could be applied a bit more, it would help all of us working in education.
Yeah, no, definitely. Our time's nearly gone. We've only got under 5 minutes left. If I could ask each of you just to, if you used to dream and sort of, we've covered lots of things here around the learner, supporting educators and teams, you know, pastorally supporting people with, like, you know, mental health, well-being, you know, like you're saying, Zach, around additional tuition and trying to support people for lost learning time. What can we learn from everything that we've covered, and what can we drive forward? What would you want to see more of? Because like you're saying, Zach, you're hardly in the office anymore. Before, you would have been. Mike, you know, there's this flexible, like you're saying, it's taking the learning out of the building, isn't it? You know, rather than like sort of thinking of bodies inside, it's like, how do we deliver learning in a new way? Which one point, if you could dream, would each of you want to see around the future of assessment and the future of qualifications and matching those for the future of work? Zach, what would you want to see?
There's probably dozens. If I could choose, if I had to choose only one, I would probably say, we work in partnership with an organisation called FICA, who support good mental health, and they speak with much more experience and expertise than I ever could on mental health. But you can teach that stuff. So from an early age, you can teach kids how to look after their mental health. You can teach them mental good health like you can teach them maths. So if there's one thing that we should learn from this, I think it would be the vital importance of teaching techniques that help you manage your mental health, that allows you to access learning and will allow you to flourish in most other areas. So I think, you know, whatever that is, extra funding, which probably isn't going to happen, time built in, a little bit of understanding that needs to be timetabled and into the curriculum at a very early age would make a massive difference.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point. Mike, could I ask you, what would you want to see for the future?
I'd like to see the idea of skills, knowledge and behaviours as being the most critical thing that we're teaching. Really embedded, and I'd really like the EIF and Ofsted and the Department for Education to all kind of really get that and understand that the purpose of FE is to prepare people for their next step, be that university or work. And we're not a sausage factory, which they wanted us to be 5 years ago, but that we're moving from being a sausage factory, all driven by QARs, to being something different, and we need a bit of time and a bit of help to get there. And Zach mentioned more funding. Well, obviously, I'm going to take the opportunity to say that, this is the best sector of education in the country, and we're underfunded. Give us more money, we might actually do even better than we already do.
Really cool. Chris, what would you like to see go forward?
Hi, Gavin. I would say from my perspective, it would be that increased flexibility for delivery, teaching and assessment. So not just assessment, the delivery and teaching of our qualifications. And I think we've already started to make waves in this area for the future of assessment. So we've got virtual reality platforms, which are free of charge. We've developed that in the nursery settings for our qualifications. We've got apps that support with remote assessment. So we're already making strides towards that. But across the full portfolio, across all qualifications, is the vision, the one from my perspective, is not just assessment, but the support that teaching, delivery and assessment to accommodate any future pandemics, but also to increase the accessibility of our qualifications for learners.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I always sort of avoid these ones by asking everyone else the question. But if I was to answer it with one, I'd agree with all of you, actually. But I think greater flexibility would be one for me. And also be able to make things so as people don't have to be so rigid in when we're sort of assessed. There's some people that want to do accelerated learning, and we could then sort of do things in different flexibilities. We can then do other times when people need a little bit more time. How can we bring the learning out of the building as well and increase those flexibilities? That'd be one for me, because I always sort of seem to avoid these ones. Our time has gone, and I just want to say thank you everyone for joining us today in your time. This is totally co-produced, so Zach and Chris, thank you for putting this all together. This is NCFE FE News working together really, really closely here. In the background as well, there's Lindsay and Kim, who've been absolutely working on this for months and months and months. So I just want to say thank you everyone for all of the efforts you put in there, and Mike for your time in today as well. So thank you. And from FE News side, it wouldn't be right without saying thank you to Leah, thank you to Kelly, thank you to Finley for all the stuff you're doing to make all the magic happen. This is episode 3. We've got episode 4 next week, so join us at 9:30 for episode 4, and we really look forward to seeing you soon, exploring the future of assessment. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks, everyone.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.